Good morning, Anchorage, Alaska, Anchorage and all of Alaska. Welcome to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media. This is your host, Justin Williams. It has been months since I've seen this studio, breathed in its air, looked at the microphone. It's so great to be back. It's so refreshing to get back into the groove of being on the radio and talking to you guys. Thank you so much for tuning in and listening. Anchorage, Alaska, my hometown where I was born and raised in 1989. It has changed so much since, the late 80s and the early to mid 90s where most of my earliest memories were formed. And so I know that there are so many institutions and organizations based in the city and the state that provide assistance to, people in need, organizations that provide that. But we are here to talk a little bit about mutual aid and how that differentiates from some of the other sources out there that do provide programs and assistance and resources to people in need in the state of Alaska. And so I have here with me Ms. Erin Baldwin Day, who is the lead organizer of a Mutual Aid Network of Anchorage, aka MANA. Erin, how are you doing today?
I am doing great. Delighted to be here with you.
Yeah, I'm delighted that you are here. We got to talk a little bit before this recording, and man, she is just a wonderful person. I think everyone who's listening is going to learn a lot today. Would you mind telling us a little bit about who you are and how you became the lead organizer of Mutual Aid Network? Like, how did you get involved with this?
Well, I'm going to give you the Reader's Digest version of that story. So I'm actually an Anchorage born and raised kid.
Yeah.
I grew up in Geneva Woods, graduated from East High School, left the state as so many of us do, was a boomerang kid that left and came back,
right.
Spent about a decade in Texas before coming back home.
Ooh.
And I actually live just around the corner from my old house, which is wild. I have my own family now.
Mm.
And we've been here since 2009. So my work has been really varied over the years. I've had the privilege to do a lot of different things. And one of the facets of my own personal interest has always been what my dad calls a save the world streak a mile wide. And it really manifested itself as COVID-19 was really ramping up. I was part of some of the message boards, the Facebook groups that popped up around supply sharing. And I was noticing that there were a lot of really generous people, a lot of folks who are offering supplies, offering resources, offering aid. And there were a lot of folks who were asking for that support, but there was not a really intuitive way for them to find each other. So there was another woman who, along with me, we were trying to help low-key moderate some of these Facebook groups and help people connect with each other, posting things like, hey, if you look six posts up from this one, somebody's got what you're looking for, that kind of thing. And eventually we connected on Facebook Messenger.
Yeah.
And this woman was a complete stranger to me.
Right.
And we started to just kind of dream about what would it look like for us to create a mechanism by which people who had something to offer could connect with someone who was in need of that thing. And that is really how MANA was born. We created a little cohort to help kind of lead the thing. We put up a website, I built a database, and we just threw it out into the world as this experimental way of trying to facilitate this exchange of aid. And I think what's really interesting about that is that's not generally the way that mutual aid begins. And I want to be clear from the outset that mutual aid is not new. It's become more visible, I think, since COVID-19. I think we've seen a proliferation of mutual aid networks really around the world. But mutual aid is ancient.
Yeah.
It's really, if you go back to its roots, it's really indigenous wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
And as someone who lives and works and plays on the unceded lands of the Dena'ina people, I think it's really important to name that when we talk about mutual aid, that this isn't something new that we've invented, that this is a way of being for a lot of people groups, not just now, but really throughout history. It's not even unique to times of crises. There were mutual aid groups, networks that were popping up in the Depression and during the civil rights movements and all of these major sort of seismic shifts that we've seen on a national and international scale, mutual aid has always been a piece of those. And so I want to be really clear that I'm this is not unique work that I do.
Right.
I'm a practitioner. I'm also a learner. I'm learning more all the time about what mutual aid is and what it can be. And I also want to give credit where credit is due.
So it's amazing for us to not even dig up or unearth, but just put an extra spotlight on this beautiful chunk of indigenous wisdom, as you called it, of history, right? And, you know, I think that for me, the concept of mutual aid is like a little bit new, working in, you know, social services and health. And it's just not a phrase that I hear very often, you know. And you kind of touched on this largely, but for our audience member who, you know, listening, who may not, you know, be able to differentiate mutual aid from this other sort of resource assistance, how would you like briefly define mutual aid for them?
Oh, that's such a great question. So the whole premise of mutual aid is that there is no distinction between someone who is in need and someone who has resources, as we would traditionally think about resources. The whole idea of mutual aid is built on the notion that everyone has something they need. We are all in need. And so when even the language that gets tossed around, I think, in our culture, in our society, around quote unquote people in need, is a way that we differentiate ourselves from our neighbors, a way that we hold ourselves apart. If we are the people who have resources interacting and engaging with someone who doesn't, there's a distinction, there's a separation there. And so what mutual aid says is, you know, we all have something that we need and we all have something to offer. Just because an individual is experiencing financial challenge, just because they don't have resources in the sense that our culture defines it, doesn't mean that they don't have something valuable, something important, something that's really, you know, essentially needed, whether that is lived experience, expertise, some kind of training, some kind of artistic capacity, a way of offering emotional and relational support. There are so many ways that we get resources from each other, and we tend to really hyper focus on the tangible.
And that's a really
Western way of thinking. To think that the only resources that matter are the ones that we can see, or the ones that we have in our bank account, or the ones that we use to pay our rent. So mutual aid is built on the notion that when we all cooperatively, collaboratively care for one another, we all have what we need to survive. And that we are not, in fact, dependent on, we don't have to be dependent on systems that typically do create a lot of barriers for people who are in need of material resource. I can give you examples of, you know, what that looks like. And most recently, and I think the pandemic did a really unfortunate job of highlighting just how difficult it is to access government resources, social services, those kinds of things. It was there. It was highlighted in sharp relief. People couldn't get access to what they needed in order to survive. And in that pandemic space, communities stepped into the gap. You had this beautiful experiment in neighbors taking care of neighbors because that was what had to happen. And historically, I think we've just been taught to believe that, well, if someone needs resources, they can just go and get them. They can get TANF, they can get temporary assistance to needy families, they can get SNAP benefits, they can get housing vouchers. And that's not entirely true. Accessing those systems is tremendously complex and difficult and not intuitive. And it's not even a guaranteed outcome. The thresholds are kind of arbitrary. And right now within the MANA network, we have a ton of people who are dependent on SNAP benefits, supplemental nutrition assistance. And because of backlog in the public assistance world, they haven't received benefits for months. You know, some since October and November. And those are dollars coming into their family that they're reliant upon to put food on the table, and those benefits have evaporated. And so this idea that, oh, well, we can rely on public assistance and social services to care for the most vulnerable among us, you know, that's, quote, not my job. I think it's a false assumption, but it's one that I think a lot of us hold. And to be honest, it was one that I myself held for a very long time until I got involved in this work and began to understand through the lived experience of my neighbors that, oh, no, that's actually inaccurate. There are not resources available to everyone. And ultimately, everyone deserves what they need to survive.
Yeah.
And if mutual aid is the way that we step into those spaces and fill those gaps and stand in solidarity with one another, then to me, that is a more compelling vision of what community can and should be, as opposed to what we currently have now, which is a lot of isolation and a lot of separation and a lot of othering of people whose life experience is very different than certainly mine as a woman who has a lot of privilege.
100%. We're kind of able to differentiate, right, what mutual aid is as a sociological concept, apart from, like you said, what we are, you know, used to, because we're always told, because it's quote unquote free, right, just go to the public assistance office, you know, but even now they're backed up. I know people who are waiting and waiting and waiting for their assistant to come through, and they've done everything on their part and they don't know what else to do. I've been helping these people for years because of my various jobs at the Office of Children's Services, at the Alaska Native Justice Center, great organizations, right? But we focus on very particular programs and very particular resources. And so more often than not, I have to tell them, I'm sorry, this is where you need to go. Now, the good part of that is that I know where they need to go. A lot of people will just say, sorry, we don't have that, good luck. And that makes things 10 times worse than sending them to a place that, you know, you know is supposed to help them. And so understanding what certain organizations are, what they do, and how they can provide, which is different from, you know, the next person and the next person, it's wonderful. But also understanding what mutual aid is and how that can help is even, I think that's even a much better thing, because again, like, a lot of people just don't know what that is. And so, and I love this idea that everyone has something, everyone needs something, right? That is beautiful. It's not just this idea of, oh, I have what you need as long as you give me, right, all of your money, all of your time, make sure that you have your printer, make sure you have your internet, because some of these packets are crazy for public assistance, for TANF, for SNAP benefits, you know? And if they're backed up, like you said, which they are, it's not their fault, but they're still suffering for it. It's like they're being punished, right? And we don't want that. And so I think having a bigger exposure on mutual aid right now, especially post-pandemic, is a very powerful and valuable resource. And speaking of resources, I'd like to touch a little bit on something that I wanted to talk to you about. What do you think some of those more intangible mental and emotional resources, what do those look like that can be provided for people?
Sure. I'm going to go back to a word I used earlier, and that was isolation. And particularly during the pandemic, I think we all experienced to some degree how damaging it is, how difficult it is to live isolated from one another. I think we got a little bit of a crash course in how much we really do need connection and community. And what we're finding, and again, this is experiential, is that there are people who connect with mutual aid because the thing that they are looking for is human connection. I mean, we live in a world that is both hyper-connected and also incredibly isolated. You know, we have these little computers that we roll around with in our pockets, but we don't have places, many of us don't have places to have real conversations and to be really present with another person and to dig into the nitty-gritty of life and to really be heard, to really be seen. And so I think we have underestimated the value of just being connected to someone else in your neighborhood and to knowing your neighbors. So one of the ways that mutual aid, at least at MANA, is trying to organize is to do so at the neighborhood level. To connect neighbors to neighbors and to connect someone who's looking for that human contact with someone who's available to provide it. So, for example, a gentleman who was deep in a grief process, who had lost someone very dear to him, connected with MANA and wanted emotional support, wanted spiritual support, wanted to just be connected to another person that lived near him. And there was a woman in his neighborhood who was a regular dialysis patient. She's disabled. She doesn't work. She is, I would say, she's someone who would traditionally experience a lot of stigma because of the fact that she cannot hold a job due to her health condition. And she was available and really excited to have a way for her to connect with a neighbor and to feel like she was providing something of really intrinsic value to this stranger. And they've developed a really beautiful friendship over the course of, you know, these years of pandemic, because he reached out to say, I need to have a friend. Mm-hmm. And she was available. She has the resource, the right. gift of availability,
wow.
which is a treasure. It's a gift that she can give, and really even a gift that she wouldn't have if she wasn't, in essence, disabled.
Right.
So, you know, I think what is amazing about mutual aid is that it helps us to reframe what matters and to affirm that, again, someone that society would maybe look at and go, oh, well, you're, you know, what are you doing with your life?
Mm-hmm.
You're not working. You know, someone who would be traditionally devalued is actually of tremendous value,
right.
for the exact reasons that some people would probably judge her. And so I love that reframe. I love the fact that mutual aid inverts the way that we think about what and who is valuable.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing that it provides a space and there is a platform, of course, you know, with the website, with the people that run it, like yourself. But there's this space, like you said, to actually voice your needs there. Right. Mm-hmm. There's already the stigma upon people who need these sorts of things. Right. And in some cultures, in some maybe smaller sociological spaces, things like therapy are looked down upon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, AA meetings, recovery, looked down upon, even though certain people need these certain services. And so now you have the mutual aid space, which says, you can bring us your questions. This is a safe space to actually ask for the help that you need, as silly as it may sound to that person who has it and takes it for granted, right?
Sure.
And the reframe there is, let's just see what you have. Let's just see. Let's just find out. Let's not quit before we start the journey,
mm-hmm.
which is, I think, in most other spaces, kind of where people hit a wall and they're just like, no, my need isn't. I'm the only one who needs this. And so why am I going to step out and embarrass myself just to get told no or to be laughed out? But these sorts of things, these sorts of more emotional and intangible resources can save lives just as much as the tangible ones can.
Oh, absolutely.
100%, right?
And I think that I think this is another important distinction is, you know, mutual aid is not charity.
Right.
You know, we say in mutual aid circles, solidarity, not charity.
Right.
And this idea of charity is, well, we're going to assume that we know what you need,
mm-hmm.
and then we're going to give you the thing we assume that you need.
Right.
So,
right.
for example, right, drive-up food pantries are a great resource for people.
Mm-hmm.
But you get what you get in that box.
Right. That's it.
Regardless of whether you know how to prepare it,
right.
or you have the equipment to prepare it,
right.
or you have a space to turn that box of whatever into meals,
mm-hmm.
you get what you get in that box.
Right.
That's charity. It's meeting a need, but it's not really offering agency in or choice or the ability to say, like, what I really need is XYZ.
Right.
And it's also not asking the question, why?
Mm.
Like, charity doesn't ask, why? Why does the same family come back to this food pantry week after week after week?
Right.
What are the underlying social conditions?
Right.
What are the underlying barriers? Why are people hungry?
Mm-hmm.
You know, charity says people are hungry, we're going to feed them. And that's good, right? That's good work. It's important work.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the second layer of that work is to start to ask the question, which is uncomfortable, why are there hungry people here?
Mm.
In a world, particularly in a country where we produce more food than we can possibly consume.
Right.
Why are people hungry?
Mm.
And that is the question that I think starts to get us to justice, to solidarity,
mm-hmm.
to saying, something is not okay here.
Right.
Maybe we should dig into that a little bit more. Maybe we should start to ask some questions about what systems are keeping people coming back to food pantries,
mm-hmm.
and then address those. And I think that's the future. I hope that's the future of mutual aid here in Anchorage. And
right.
you know, we're a baby, right?
Right.
We're
absolutely.
A little baby organization right now. But I hope that as we continue to listen to each other and listen to our neighbors, that some of those solutions will become evident. And that's another piece of community organizing that I really believe in, is the people who are closest to the problem are closest to the solution.
Mm.
And so, you know, for folks like myself who have never had to go to a drive-up food pantry, to a mobile food pantry,
mm-hmm.
who have never been in a scenario where I myself had to go seek assistance for me and my children, right? Mm-hmm. I've never been in that space.
Right.
I probably don't have the context to identify solutions. But the families who do, the mothers who do have that experience,
yeah.
I think they probably already know
mm-hmm.
what needs to change. But nobody's asking them.
Right.
Nobody's asking the folks who are the most impacted.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the solutions are being built, you know, five wow. layers higher.
Wow.
Which makes no sense if you think about it. Like, if you think about it, even from an engineering standpoint, that's not how we develop projects.
Mm-hmm.
We don't develop them five layers removed from the people who are going to be using the tool.
Right.
But that's exactly what we do in like a charity-oriented world.
Yeah.
And I hope that mutual aid starts to become a counterpoint in that conversation, starts to become a voice that says, no, wait, we're going about this backwards.
Mm.
Yeah, let's, rather than silencing folks who we perceive to be, quote, needy,
mm-hmm.
Let's actually engage a conversation.
Right.
And I believe that that's a space where mutual aid really does have the ability to change and reshape the way that we operate as a society.
Mm. I think that we are all conditioned to, here, I guess, in this country, kind of conditioned to walk around with an ego, you know, right here, like a pendant, like a penchant, like on a necklace or something like that, just to kind of have it around us and say, you know, I'm too good to ask questions.
Mm.
And if I am going to have questions, it's going to be to the people that are better off than I am. And that is a little bit backwards, because those people they're privileged to not have to worry about the problems, right? They postpone the problems, but when you postpone the problems, you postpone the solutions. If you don't ask questions, you don't get answers. But when you're in a space where you're privileged to not have to worry about that, how can you expect them to provide for the people who have to worry about this on a day-to-day basis?
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the social services field, it feels really good, and I can say this, I can attest to this from a personal standpoint, like it feels really good to actually see the fruit of your work. Usually you would just plant the seed and then, you know, it's underneath the dirt, you don't see it again. And there's those rare moments where we actually get to see some plants grow, some trees grow, some flowers grow, and you're like, okay, that's amazing that we were able to do that. But then we think that that's the finish line, right?
Mm.
In most cases, it's usually just the beginning for the person that needed those flowers.
I'm Justin Williams, speaking with Aaron Baldwin Day about Mutual Aid Network of Anchorage. Stay tuned. This is Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Justin Williams, speaking with Aaron Baldwin Day about the grassroots organization Mutual Aid Network of Anchorage.
I'd actually love to maybe offer an illustration
yeah.
that's happening right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
With Mutual Aid. So First of all, huge shout out to the nonprofit that is the fiscal sponsor for MANA, the Alaska Public Interest Research Group. They are a local nonprofit that does some really incredible, really valuable work around economic justice and consumer advocacy, good and transparent government, energy, those kinds of things.
Yeah.
And they were willing to take a shot and be the 501c3 that sort of shelters MANA. And that's part of how we can operate financially. And there's this project, this collaborative project that has grown up out of both ACPIRG's work with economic justice and some of what we were hearing inside of MANA, inside of the mutual aid network, about predatory lending. And I offer this because I think it illustrates, you know, what you were just talking about with respect to the ego and to the fact that, you know, we walk around and we don't always ask questions. We don't interrogate our environment. We don't wonder about what's happening around us all the time. And predatory lending is exactly that kind of issue. It's something that is invisible unless it's something that you need.
Right.
Here in Alaska, payday loans are a way that people who are in need of small dollar credit can access it. And by small dollar credit, I mean $500 or less.
Mm-hmm.
And payday lenders operate mostly in what we would think about as being, you know, economically disadvantaged neighborhoods.
Right.
In places where people don't necessarily have access to the kind of credit that, you know, allows you to pull out your little piece of plastic and swipe it, right? To float some of that electric bill until the next month,
right.
You know? Folks who don't have access to that kind of banking, end up in situations like many of us do, where there's just a little gap that needs to be covered between what I have for my utility bill and what I have in my bank account and what I owe. And payday lenders offer this option, right? We'll give you up to $500 and you owe it back to us in 2 weeks by your next paycheck. Which sounds fine in theory until you understand that the APR, the annual percentage rate on a payday loan in the state of Alaska is 435%. Now, if you've never had to take out a payday loan, this means nothing to you. But if you have, then you know that, yes, you get the cash that you need, but it comes at a tremendous cost.
Right.
That you may or may not ever be able to pay back.
Yeah.
So one of the pieces of the solution has been to just provide that immediate relief, right? To pay off people's payday loans. And MANA's in the midst of a project right now. We're calling it the Payday Jubilee. And we are just zeroing out people's payday loans.
Wow.
It is so cool. And at the same time, it is absolutely devastating to hear the stories.
Mm-hmm.
To hear why people took out payday loans.
Right.
And what has kept them trapped with a payday loan outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
And for some folks, by the time they have paid out their loan, a loan that was originally $500, their repayment is like over $1,000,
yeah,
which is nuts.
Which is insane.
It is insane. And it's wrong. So the relief piece is great, but the secondary piece is to change the law.
Yeah.
The secondary piece is to say, well, you know, there's a structural solution here that can keep our neighbors from being extorted, basically, because they happen to be both experiencing poverty and desperate. So in order to do that work, right, there's a level of education that needs to happen because most legislators have never had to take out a payday loan.
Right.
They're wearing the necklace.
They're wearing the necklace, yeah.
And so part of our work is to do that education and to offer folks who have had this experience with payday lending, to offer folks the opportunity to tell their own story and to be visible and to say, this is my experience. You know, this is the real human cost of an industry that's exploitative.
Yeah.
And for that necklace to start to be removed, for the blinders to come off, and for folks to recognize, oh my goodness, this is happening in our community.
And that's the reframe, yeah.
And that's the reframe.
Yeah.
But you don't get to the reframe, right? I would imagine that most legislators, if they're from anywhere on the road system, have driven by a payday lender.
Yeah.
But they've not stopped to ask the question, I wonder what that's about.
Right. Why is that there?
Why is that there? Why is this payday lender? Why is this storefront in this part of town?
Mm-hmm.
But I've never seen one in this other part of town.
I've never seen it in my neighborhood. Right.
And that's that to me is an illustration of what happens when you move closer, right? When you move across lines of difference.
Right.
And when you really, when you listen to the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
When you cultivate relationships across lines of difference,
right,
and those stories get an opportunity to surface, then we can make change.
Mm-hmm.
But we can't do it as long as those voices stay silent.
Right. And so those voices are extremely important. And I think, too, a lot of the times people don't ask these things because genuinely, especially younger people, they don't know. Right. And so, again, putting the spotlight out there and making sure people know about these things, especially young people, they get the word out and they're able to not only engage in restorative tactics, but preventative tactics, right? And so my next question for you is MANA involved with like other local organizations, maybe even having presentations at the Anchorage School District level, the Food Bank of Alaska to maybe straighten up, you know, I don't know, some stuff that is kind of like broken that you think can be mended or even maybe even replaced by a better, more efficient and effective system?
Wow, that's a far ranging question. You know, we really have not interfaced with larger organizations.
Mm-hmm.
For a variety of reasons.
Okay.
One of those just being capacity.
Right.
And understanding that, again, MANA is a fledgling little organization.
Mm-hmm.
And what's needed right now is really more relationship building inside of the network.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like I mentioned earlier, we started in a non-traditional way, right? Most mutual aid networks start from this very grassroots, very neighborhood level
mm-hmm.
kind of space. And we started as like a matchmaking agency.
Right, right.
And so I think we have some work to do. MANA has some work to do in backfilling a little bit.
Yeah.
And in inviting neighbors inside of neighborhoods who have already expressed interest in mutual aid to connect with one another
mm-hmm.
and to start to build those relationships inside of the neighborhood.
Yeah.
Which is not, it's not big, it's not sexy, it's not, you know, like a project that you can point to and be like, check that out.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's this really necessary component, and it's something that we couldn't do during COVID.
Right.
And so now we get to rewind a little bit.
Yeah.
and kind of get back to the roots of mutual aid in a way, which is really exciting to me because that means new energy, that means new leadership, that means mm-hmm. new people coming to the table and saying, I'd really like to create this kind of community within my neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
So are we ready? Are we ready to go to the food bank and be, you know, and offer mutual aid as a parallel resource? Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also the reality that, you know, MANA is entirely like self-funded.
Right, right.
And we're not in a position to be like, hey, we can take over, you know, we can do food security work on this grand scale. We can't. Not yet.
Right.
I hope we get there.
Mm-hmm.
But in the meantime, what we are doing, I think that's important is we're connecting with other smaller entities
mm-hmm.
that are doing similar kinds of work that are working in some ways outside of the traditional bounds of social services,
mm-hmm.
outside of the realm of charity and working to develop different ways of supporting people and making sure that people have what they need to survive.
Right.
And so that's been, I think, in the short term, more fruitful and really more aligned with what mutual aid is about. And those are the partnerships that I'm excited to strengthen. Those are the partnerships that I want to see develop. And, you know, if at some point, you know, Food Bank of Alaska or Anchorage School District or, you know, whatever larger structure is interested in the mutual aid conversation,
mm-hmm.
I would welcome that.
Right.
I would welcome that. But I also am aware that it's really common for good work to get derailed and to get co-opted in a way because we try to do too much too fast.
Right.
And we try to do it outside of relationship. We try to do it outside of that connection.
Yeah.
And that's a place I'm not willing to compromise.
I hear you. I think that's beautiful too, because you kind of have to stand your ground, and without character, even the best intended organizations, they crumble from within.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I've seen it happen. And it's really scary, especially post-pandemic. There's some families, there's some businesses that are still recovering from 2 years ago, 3 years ago, and we want to see them come up, right? This has just been such a fantastic conversation. I just appreciate you taking the time to educate us on all of this. Are there any events coming up? Are there any ways for, you know, anyone listening right now to access MANA and just get involved, to volunteer, to sign up? Where do you go to register for services? Where do you go to register to provide services for people in need? Like, what's MANA's future look like as far as just expansion and growth?
Sure. So in the spirit of mutual aid, there's only one place to connect. There's only one form. It doesn't matter if you're coming to MANA because you have a specific and immediately presenting need, or if you have a resource that you would like to offer, it's the same form.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, everybody has something to offer and everybody has something that they need. And even folks who identify, who connect with MANA and who say, I don't have any resources to offer at this time, even in the follow-up conversations, we always ask, you know, what training do you have? What expertise do you have? What skills did your grandma teach you?
Right.
Whatever, you know, you have something to offer. Yeah. We affirm that back to people. So it's just one place, one form.
Right.
And it's on our website. Our website is wearemana.org. And if you go to the Connect form, it's really easily visible on the website. The Connect form walks you through a series of questions about who you are, where you live, the resources and aid that you're both seeking and offering, and just a little bit of information about, you know, how you connected with us and why. Mm. And then that's it. So yeah. it's pretty straightforward.
Right.
There's a follow up to that. There's a follow up phone call that happens, and just, you know, to say hello. Mm-hmm. And right now, there are no events planned right this minute, other than the Payday Jubilee.
Yeah.
But what I'm hopeful for is that, you know, as a result of conversations like this and MANA beginning to be a little bit more visible in Anchorage, that people will really buy into this idea that, you know, that the strength is in the neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
that's where our resilience lies, is in our neighborhoods.
Yeah.
And that there will be neighborhoods that decide.
Yes.
We're going to host our own meetup. Like, we're going to host our own block party and talk about mutual aid and talk about what our neighborhood needs and what we can do for and with each other. I hope that comes from within.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, that's something that bubbles up organically and not something that, you know, I'm sitting up here directing, you know, the lady behind the curtain or whatever. So if people want to get involved with MANA, that is amazing. And especially if people are interested in helping to organize.
Right.
If people want to help organize their neighborhood, man, that is exactly what I need right now.
Right.
Is more folks who have that passion and capacity, because we've lost a lot of our organizers this year. This year and last year, folks moving out of state, folks moving out of Anchorage. Right. We're only organizing in Anchorage right now, and so it's been tough.
Right.
And having folks who want to see this kind of community grow. Those are the folks I'm looking for.
Right on. And I, as a graphic designer myself, I have to say the website is beautiful.
Oh, thanks. Wow.
I'm just throwing that out there. I love it's easy to navigate. It's simple. It's not convoluted. It is a very beautiful website.
That makes my heart so happy.
But what I want to know what that need looks like, right? Like what kind of skill sets are you looking for in people who are saying, I want to volunteer, I want to help? Is there a particular need right now?
Oh my goodness. I mean, anybody who has, you know, who has skills with social media and graphic design, we don't really have anybody right now that has the capacity to just keep us present in social media spaces, which is really important. Mm-hmm. People who care about people and who just want to get to know neighbors, who want to make follow-up phone calls to people and say, hey, you know, welcome to the network. What brought you here?
Yeah.
You know, and to say hello, to be a welcoming, you know, initial first place of contact. Mm-hmm. People who have skills organizing groups of people and, you know, mobilizing people to do work in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. People who are interested in fundraising and gathering resources to be able to distribute. Mm-hmm. Basically, if there's a skill set you have, we can probably put it to use.
Definitely.
The sky's the limit. And I think what I've heard most from folks who have gotten connected with MANA and who have invested themselves is this notion that they felt really powerless before. You know, they were looking at kind of the enormity of the world's suffering and feeling like, what am I to do with my time, with my energy? These problems that we're facing as a society seem so huge, so big, so intractable. And getting connected with mutual aid has helped them to feel like, oh, there is a role for me. Mm-hmm. Like, my effort matters. My investment matters. And there's a sense of empowerment that comes with that, that I think is really, really important for where we are in this moment in history.
That's fantastic. You heard it here, folks. If you want to get involved with mutual aid, Erin is the person to talk to. The website is wearemana.org.
Wearemana.org.
Wearemana, MANA.org. Well, thank you so much, Ms. Erin, for having for being a part of what we're doing here and getting the word out here at Hometown Alaska. Really appreciate you just offering your time, your expertise, sharing your heart, sharing your history, sharing, you know, your insight into what needs to happen, you know, so that the city can just be better in the ways that it needs to be. You know, it's really easy to cover up a wound, but it takes some time for it to heal. And that's, I think, what we really want. We don't want wounds just covered up by long sleeve shirts. We just want our sleeves rolled up and wounds healed. Mm. And this is one of the great ways that I've experienced and been educated on to see that happen in due time. So thank you so much for being on our show. We really appreciate your time. Thank you so much for being part of Hometown Alaska.
It has been a pleasure, Justin. Thank you.
Yeah.
That was my conversation with lead organizer for Mutual Aid Network of Anchorage, Erin Baldwin Day. I'm Justin Williams, and this is Hometown Alaska on Alaska Public Media. Coming up next, State of Art.
Do you have an idea for a show you'd like to hear on Hometown Alaska? Send us an email to hometown@alaskapublic.org.
I'm Sabrina Tavernisi, host of The Daily. With the extraordinary reach of New York Times journalism, we are here bringing you the sound and the story. Listen every weekday as New York Times reporters unpack more of what you want to know about our world as it happens. That's The Daily from The New York Times.
Weekdays at 1:30 only on Alaska Public Media, FM 91.1.
Alaska Public Media works hard to provide you with crucial and entertaining programming, coverage, and community engagement every day. We want to hear from you, our listeners, supporters, and fans about what Alaska Public Media has made possible in your life. Call 907-550-8413 to leave us a message, and you can be featured on TV or radio. That's 907-550-8413.
Alaska Public Media would like to alert listeners that the following contains language that may be offensive.
From Alaska Public Media, this is State of Art. Welcome to State of Art on Hometown Alaska, your weekly dose of Anchorage arts and culture. I'm Ammon Swenson. Coming up, we'll hear all about Out North's Fringe Festival. It runs the entire month of April and will include live performances, films, and workshops. We're joined by Out North's executive director, Aaron Willihan, and Fringe artistic director, Indra Arriaga, to find out more. Willihan speaks next.
Out North's mission is to advance contemporary art in Anchorage, support underrepresented voices, and promote cultural dialogue. Out North has been around since 1985. It started out as a way to present LGBTQ theater in Anchorage and Alaska at a time when the sociopolitical visibility of the queer community here was really struggling and provided a space and a place to grow. And from there, it became a multidisciplinary arts organization encompassing, you know, visual arts, music, all sorts of other organizations that became housed at Out North over the many years and iterations. And then Out North Radio started, I believe, in 2010 and still operates today as its own kind of entity located in Spinard.
And kind of, yeah, could somebody give me a little bit of a update with what's been going on with Out North in the, I mean, maybe in the last couple of years, I guess?
Well, I feel like, you know, we did have a short hiatus, but in the last couple of years, I feel that Out North has really stepped up and has grown and, you know, has evolved into this new iteration, you know, which is more encompassing than ever. And so based on that, there's been a lot of development of programming that is really focused on collaborations with other entities and artists and, you know, journalists. So it's been pretty exciting, actually, to have it sort of like reemerge as something that is socially relevant.
And maybe stronger than ever.
And pretty strong, yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's really exciting. You know, we were at a conference in New York and like we actually ran into people who knew about Out North, and that's always exciting. Yeah. You know.
Out North Fringe Festival is coming up, and it's going to be running the entire month of April. We'll dive into some of the specifics a little bit more, but just kind of what is it, broad strokes?
Yeah, so the Out North Fringe Festival, this is going to be the second annual Out North Fringe Festival. It began last year. We had a month-long event in the month of April downtown in Anchorage, and it's really a celebration of performance art in Anchorage and in Alaska. It's a way for artists here to develop new work, present that work to audiences, present work that's challenging, daring, that might not be able to be seen otherwise. And it's also a chance for artists here to have a perspective from outside artists. So we always bring in at least one act that will be from outside of Alaska alongside, you know, uplifting local art, film, performance.
Yeah. Can you tell me about, have we gotten the visiting artist? Can we talk about that?
Absolutely. I'll let you take that one, Indra.
Yeah. So our visiting artist is not a stranger to Alaska. They actually performed at Out North about 15 years ago. And then they had a documentary in the film festival. I don't recall exactly when, at least 5 years ago. And it's a duo from, the Juilliard graduates, and they've developed this whole, like, partnership, you know, in performance art. They're excellent musicians. They're excellent performers. Their collective name is Slanty-Eyed Mama, you know, and so they really deconstruct, you know, stereotypes of racism and, you know, in the Asian American community in particular. And they're partnering with another artist who's coming in from Boston. And the artist is like witchcraft, but with a B.
I think you can say.
We'll go for it.
Okay, but so witchcraft, right? And this is brand new work that they're doing. It's the premiere of this work. And then from here, it goes to other parts in the East Coast. So we're really, really exciting. Their presentation is a theatrical concert. So it's a combination of just incredible music and also their performance around social issues. Yeah, and they're a lot of fun. They're really dynamic. They're incredible, well-established artists, so we're really excited to have them.
Awesome. What was maybe the determining factor on deciding on these specific artists?
Well, I think, so I'm just going to read a little bit of how they describe their work. Describe it as an inspiring new show of comedy, spoken word, rock and roll, and all-around rebellion about how to be in the world and kick ass on your own terms. And so I think that kind of the subversiveness of these particular artists, the ways that they are, you know, standing in their own truth, speaking truth to power, and also very much highlighting a, you know, a queer identity and also underrepresented identities, is right in line with what we want Fringe to be, and also falls in with the legacy of Out North and that Out North has upheld for the last, you know, almost 40 years now.
Yeah, totally. It just sounds like a good match for both organization and artist.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, you know, where did the idea for the festival come from? I know this is the second year, but yeah, what did that kind of spawn out of?
Yeah, so we've been wanting to get back into the performance space of Anchorage's arts ecosystem for a while now. Out North used to have a very strong presence and was also known for bringing in outside artists and really challenging work to Anchorage. As we went through the pandemic, you know, we're finally kind of coming back into in-person events. It felt like the right time for us last year to bring back a program called Under 30. And Under 30 is something that went on for about 20 years and then took about a 10-year hiatus. And it was a way for local artists to perform and show new work each under 30 minutes and develop that over the course of time and then present it as part of this program. So we wanted to bring back Under 30, and we also had a show called Psycho Sarah from a woman named Sarah McMillan that was kind of brought to us through our Mental Health Mosaics program. Mm. And we had these two shows that we wanted to be able to produce. We fell into being able to use the theater space downtown at 4th and D, and it kind of just all fell into place. And before we knew it, we were realizing that we had almost a festival lineup going on. And then we got to thinking about kind of the vibe of that and the way that, you know, Alaska doesn't have a Fringe Festival at all. Anchorage doesn't have a Fringe Festival. Fringe festivals are a pretty important part of a lot of other cities' arts programming throughout the year. And so kind of our dream and long-term goal for this is that it can continue to grow, continue to activate more spaces around Anchorage, and also become kind of a bulwark for experimental art in Anchorage, attract folks to our city, and also inspire other organizations to take on their own programming and events in the years to come that can be under the umbrella of a Fringe Festival.
Totally. And it seems like it's expanded from last year, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It doubled in time, and it's just, I mean, we have something going on every weekend, you know, it's pretty exciting. And we're also like, it's not Anchorage focused. So we have, you know, performers coming in from Fairbanks and Juneau. And so we want it, you know, in this, the spirit of Fringe and the spirit of community, the community doesn't stop, you know, in Anchorage.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I would also add that, you know, this year we have some great community partners. I want to especially shout out Tent City Press, who we're working with for this year, as well as Anchorage International Film Festival. And our dream is like I said, for this to continue to grow and engage our entire community. And yeah,
and the funders have been incredible. Like, we couldn't do this, you know, without the funders. So it's the Adwood Foundation and
Alaska Community Foundation and Alaska Airlines.
Yeah.
Well, you kind of mentioned this a little bit, but could we talk about the Under 30 for a little bit more? So its performance is under 30 minutes, but it's kind of anything, right? It could be any number of type of things. Could we maybe talk about that just a little bit more? Maybe what makes it interesting or unique?
Yeah. So we got this year 10 different, you know, submissions, and it's everything, everything from dance to comedy, you know, even a proposal that involved, you know, streaming media. I mean, we got a lot of things, and so it was a really difficult selection process, you know, and so we try to present work that we think will work well together, work well in the space. You know, our space it has some limitations. And so all that, you know, we take into account, and also we want to represent, like I said, you know, parts of Alaska. So, you know, Fairbanks and Juneau and Anchorage represent different age groups, represent different disciplines as well. It's pretty exciting, actually. It's going to be great. We do have our selection.
Yeah, we do.
We do.
Could you give me just like a little preview?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So this year's under 30 artists are going to be Alan Hayton, Timo Goodlow, and Stephanie Brown. Mm-hmm. And so the four of them will be each developing their new original experimental work over the next month. And for a lot of them, are ideas that they've already kind of been, you know, chewing on for a while now and have a platform to enact it. And that'll be April 28th to the 30th. So you definitely don't want to miss that one.
Yeah, and like one of the things that's exciting, you know, for me personally in this particular lineup is you have performers that are really like seasoned and established, you know, and then you have someone coming into the performance space who has never done it before. Mm-hmm. So it's a, you know, it's almost like a multi-generational in a way to mentor new artists and grow, you know, our just platform for everybody.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Well, also, I see that there are the Fringe Film Nights. Can we talk about that as well? Kind of along that same vein, experimental, pushing boundaries, but kind of what specifically is going on with that?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the most exciting ones that I think Indra can speak to a little bit better is the Fringe Film Night that's for under 7 minute short films. And we're still accepting proposals and submissions for that. So it doesn't have to be, you know, a huge budget film. It could be something you shot on your iPhone that you and your friends made in the basement, you know, all ages, all anything goes. There's no real limitations for that one. But I'll let you speak about that a little bit.
Except for the time. We, you know, we want to keep it under 7 minutes so we can show as many as we can. And we see this as a really good way of making, you know, the platform accessible to anybody, right? Mm. Anybody can do it. You don't have to consider yourself a filmmaker. You don't have to have experience doing it. You don't have to, like, use fancy equipment. Like this is it. Here's your chance. Do whatever you want in under 7 minutes, and we'll show it.
Well, I see there's also going to be workshops. Have those started to get kind of locked in? And do you know, or can at least give us a little preview about what some of those would be?
Yeah, so when the show that's here set the 7th through the 9th, so that's Kate Rigg, Lyris, and Bitchcraft, so Slanty Eyed Mama Duo and Bitchcraft are here in Anchorage. They'll be doing some community outreach and engagement workshops. Those will most likely be, we're working on a partnership with Highland Correctional, so they're going to hopefully be in there for a workshop with some folks who are incarcerated, as well as some workshops with youth in Anchorage. And so we're really excited about that. And I think that there will also be some other kind of opportunities to engage with a couple of the other artists in April as well.
Yeah, with Allison Warden is coming back. You know, so she was in our Under 30 last year, and this year she's doing a full concert.
Oh, cool.
And so she'll be, you know, we'll be having conversations, you know, after one of the shows where people can ask questions and just hear their thoughts on the performance.
Yeah. Anything else that you'd want to add that maybe we didn't touch on about Fringe Fest or Out North?
Well, I mean, I think I just want to mention that not only are we doing Fringe Fest this year, but Fringe Fest for next year is already in the works. You know, we're already like moving and planning. And so if anybody has any ideas, wants to collaborate, you know, just contact us.
That was Aaron Willihan and Indra Arriaga from Out North telling us about Fringe Festival. It runs the entire month of April. And that's all for State of Art. I'm Ammon Swenson. Thanks for listening.
All right, that's all for Hometown Alaska today. Special shout out to our guest, Aaron Baldwin Day from Mutual Aid Network of Anchorage. Thank you so much for joining us. You can find us on the Hometown Alaska page on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Justin Williams, your host. Today's episode has been produced by Ammon Swenson. Thanks so much for listening.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.